supporting WHYY Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
Nationals 8-4. Roy Oswalt heads the mound tonight at 7:05. He'll face Washington's John Lannon. The Independents face Magic Jack in the WPS semifinals today at PPL Park at 4. And the Union are in Columbus tonight. They meet the Crew at 7:30. This is WHYY.
Welcome to You Bet Your Garden. I'm your host, Mike McGrath. Coming up later in the show, we will not trash wood mulch for a change. Instead, we will tell you the best mulches that you can use instead of those nasty wood chip things, and your best chance of finding them, what kind of store you'll find them in, and what you'll find in those stores. You won't want to miss it. We're also going to talk to a guy in paradise, a coffee grower in Kona, growing his beans organically. Talk about living the dream. Well, that's a lot to do. We better hop right to your fascinating phone calls at 1-888-346-9499. Carol, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hi, Mike.
Hello, Carol. How are you?
I'm happy, I guess.
Okay, happy, I guess. And where is Carol happy, she guesses?
50 miles northwest of Tulsa, Oklahoma.
So even though you have no water, you're still happy.
I'm happy because it's cool and raining.
Oh, congratulations, finally. What can we do for Carol in suddenly wet Oklahoma?
I save every drop of rainwater I can in every little bitty bucket, 5 gallons and up. And the beautiful leopard frogs and tree frogs have found them and fill them with these gelatinous egg masses.
Because there are no natural bodies of water around?
Not within a quarter mile.
Okay, so you've left buckets and such out.
Yeah, I'm catching the rainwater, and usually I fill them with the little BT crumbles.
Okay,
to
good.
Mosquito larvae.
You know, it's funny because in my region, I always think of springtime as breeding time, especially for toads. You know, they come up out of hibernation, they go to the prom, they, you know, they lay their eggs, and the tadpoles, you know, very quickly turn into what they're going to become as adults.
Yeah.
Because they're using these temporary bodies of water that exist in the spring that are gone by the dryness of the summertime. And you actually have the egg masses now.
My concern, Mike, is that I don't know how to provide them enough oxygen to keep them from dying.
Have you had death?
Yes. And I also am not sure what to feed them except the mosquito larvae and any dead bugs I can find, which I haven't killed with anything at all other than fly swatter.
And how many buckets, how many eggs, how many rags, any bones, any bottles today? I mean, how many creatures are we talking about, vaguely?
A lot. Everything that is, you know, a tote that you might store your Christmas ornaments in, that big size,
right,
to a cat litter, a 30-pound container.
And they've all got eggs in them. Or,
oh, yeah. And,
or tadpoles.
The tadpoles number in probably at least 100 in each.
Oh, man. Okay, so here's my plan.
Yeah.
Go to a store and get a hard plastic wading pool.
Yes, I have one for the dogs, and they're in there, too.
Okay.
I'll get another one.
Okay, and then get a couple of cheap aquarium bubblers.
Yeah, okay.
And run those out to the wading pool, and that will oxygenate the water.
Yeah.
Because you're right, they are using up the oxygen too much. The big pools should be in the shade. Empty as many of the buckets as you can into them.
Right.
Keep the bubblers going.
Yeah.
And then, as to food, I think some of them feed on decaying plant matter, some of them feed on other small aquatic organisms. I don't think Purina makes polywog chow, unfortunately. But look online, you know, because there are herpetologists.
Yeah.
You know what you could even do, and I bet you could get away with this.
What?
If you called our old friend Rick Relia at the University of Pittsburgh.
Okay.
He is the guy who did the research that found that store-bought Roundup was deadly to amphibians.
All right.
He learned this by buying Roundup in a store and pouring it in these specialized tanks where he raises all sorts of frogs and toads.
Mm-hmm.
So he has all the science. He knows how to keep these creatures alive in these fake vernal pools of his.
Okay.
So he'll be able to tell you in a New York minute what, if anything, needs to be fed to these creatures. And either Rick or somebody who's playing around with these things at home on a website will be able to tell you if there's any kind of secondary food. But you know, if you've got a big body of water out in the shade, there's going to be lots of bugs and stuff
mm-hmm.
that are attracted to it. And I think you've got a decent chance that a little bit of a food chain will be established. I think the important thing is get them out of the smaller containers, get them into a bigger container. You know, that'll keep the water temperature more constant. In a small one, they were probably getting too hot during the day and too cold at night.
Yeah.
But I love the fact that they like you so much. You know, and obviously you have a very lively environment. I can't imagine a better thing. And if you're a gardener, you know, there's no better pest controllers on the planet than toads.
Well, thanks. So, the frogs, thank you. And hey, thanks for speaking up for the spiders and the snakes. Our species is too narcissistic. Nature's not after us.
All right. You take care and you take good care of your toads and frogs.
Thanks, Mike. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. 1-888-346-9499. Nathan, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
How you doing?
I'm doing good, Nathan. How are you, sir?
Fantastic.
And where is Nathan Fantastic?
Russellville, Kentucky.
All right. What can we do for you, sir?
Well, I just moved to a new property, and we discovered an apple tree that is in horrible health. And I was hoping you could give me some pointers as to how to bring it back.
I'll warn you, Nathan, that once we get into the height of the summer, apple trees in general don't look their best. So tell me what's going on with it.
Okay. What we've got is he's probably about 18 feet tall. About 4 feet up the main trunk, it splits into 4 liters,
ooh,
which I know is a major problem to begin with. I don't think this tree has been cared for in probably 10 years. A lot of dead branches, broken, hanging off. The main trunk looks like it's been attacked by a couple of hundred woodpeckers. It's got pock holes in it, all the way around it, all the way up.
Mm-hmm.
And then I've also got old knots where it looks like branches have broken off in the past that have been ate into and birds have made nests there. It does have some apples on it, but the apples are badly dimpled.
Right. Well, that's to be expected because they weren't cared for this season.
Right.
The first thing you want to do is right now, because the tree is still fully leafed out, right?
Yes.
While you can see the branches that are dead, they should all come off as soon as possible. And don't be afraid of taking off dead wood. It will lighten the load on this tree immensely. So get all the dead wood off now while you can still see the areas that are dead. And if the end of a branch is dead and the bottom part of the branch is good, be conservative. Don't take off too much living wood right now. And then in the middle of winter, the coldest that you get, that's when I want you to go out and look at that tree and really see what you can do to limit the height a little bit. Maybe take out a couple of leading branches going straight up, because otherwise the apples up there just attract pests if you can't get to them to care for them. And open up the center of the tree and give it its first good winter pruning. I'm not going to worry about balance or anything like this, because this is going to be, you know, a major reconstruction effort, taking off the dead wood now and giving it its first pruning when it's dormant in the middle of winter. And then in the springtime, when the tree blossoms out, then you'll see that maybe there's a dead part you missed. Anything that doesn't flower is probably not in good shape. Still in the springtime, very safe to prune off any wood that's not doing well. And then both this fall and in the spring, I really want you to rake that orchard floor, so to speak. Get up all the dropped apples, all the debris from your pruning, and get it out of the area. Make sure there's no weeds growing right up around the trunk. Get a good hoe or whatever you need, or a lawnmower that you can go down low and really clean the area underneath the tree. This will also help you find any dropped apples down there because they're going to be reservoirs of disease. And then when you got that area pretty clean, put down an inch of compost all around, starting a few inches out from the trunk. Don't touch the trunk, but go out as far as you can, as far as the furthest branch. This will keep weeds down, give the tree a nice gentle feeding. And then when the flowers fall off and the apples begin appearing, what you want to do is you want to remove at least every other apple. You know, you take off as much extra fruit as you can, and that will allow the remaining fruits to have the energy to get big and full. And then you're probably going to have some pests. You're probably going to have plum curculios making little scars in the fruits. You may have apple maggots burrowing into the fruits. I really urge you to just take care of the tree culturally, to do the prunings and do the thinnings and see what attacks the fruits. And then at the end of the season, you should get some good-tasting apples. You may have to cut around some bad spots, some bug holes or something like that. But it'll give you a chance to see if you really want to save this, because a lot of these older trees were planted from seed, and apples don't come true from seed. But then next year, if you enjoy the apples that you eat, the good parts of them, then I can teach you how to help control the pests that come after them organically. But it's always good that first year to kind of get a rogue's gallery of what will be competing for your apples with you. And in a case like this, to allow you to sample the apples and see if this is a project you want to take long term.
Okay.
All right. Well, good luck, sir. And I hope your apples are sweet and tart and delicious next season.
Thank you very much.
Take care, sir. Well, it's time for me to take a little break and warn all of our prune-happy listeners that the safe time to cut back spring-blooming plants like azaleas, rhododendrons, lilacs, and forsythia is long past. Give them a trim now and you'll cut the buds off of the flowers you would hope to see next season. But don't go hiding your shears from that helpful spouse of yours just yet, because we'll be right back with more of your fabulous phone calls, growing coffee organically in Hawaii, and the best mulches you can buy at a garden center. I'm Mike McGrath, and this is You Bet Your Garden.
You're listening to You Bet Your Garden on WHYY.
The Wilmington University College of Health Professions supports WHYY and offers accelerated degree programs for working nurses, including an RN to BSN program and a bachelor's degree in allied health. Master's programs are available for professionals interested in becoming nurse practitioners, nursing educators, and legal nurse consultants. Programs are available 100% online or in the classroom and can be completed in as little as 1 year. Fall classes are forming now. Details at wilmu.edu/nursing.
Learn about home improvement from the experts at a reception and discussion with the hosts of Ask This Old House, Tuesday, August 30th, 6 to 8 p.m. at WHYY's Philadelphia studios. For more information and to register, whyy.org/member experience.
Welcome back to You Bet Your Garden. I'm your host, Mike McGrath. Coming up later in the show, a question that perhaps we've been dodging for a decade or more. Exactly what good mulches can be found at the average garden center? What are they going to say? What are they going to look like? Where can you find them? We'll tackle that question head on in the question of the week. And we'll have lots more of your fabulous phone calls. But now it's time to talk about some of my favorite topics: organic growing, good coffee, and Hawaii. I love a good cup of coffee first thing in the morning. I've always been fascinated by what it takes to grow coffee organically. And of course, everyone has heard the mystique of Kona coffee, one of the most valuable coffees in the world. Well, we have someone here today to talk to us about the reality of growing Kona organically on Kona. Dr. Hans F. Eckert, who is the owner of the Lyman Kona Coffee Farms on the Big Island. Dr. Eckert, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Thank you, Mike. Thank you very much.
Well, it's a pleasure to have you here, although I wish I was interviewing you in person. I'm sure you're looking out on a beautiful sky and amazing plants in bloom.
Yes, I am. I am. Our farm is at 2,100 feet, and I have an unobstructable ocean view. The ocean is 4 miles away. We have a bed and breakfast, and our guests sit on the lanai every morning and overlook our coffee orchard. We call it orchard here, or farm, and 3,200 trees. And yes, some of them are in bloom now.
Oh.
I'll tell you a little bit more about bloom, because they bloom after every heavy rain.
Oh, okay. Now, how old are the trees?
The trees are about 8 years old.
And that's young, isn't it?
Well, actually, they start bearing within a couple of years. And they are considered fully mature when they're 6 to 8 years old, and they bear for 100 years or longer.
Oh, okay. Now, in California, which I kind of relate what you're doing because you're German, right? And you ran away to Hawaii to have your fantasy orchard. And so many people go to Northern California to do the same thing with a vineyard. I mean, there's that history going back to Jack London. Now, when we talk about Kona, we're talking about like Bordeaux, like Champagne, it Vidalia onions. It applies to a region where this stuff was grown.
Correct.
You can't grow Kona coffee in Jamaica.
No, you cannot. You'd grow Jamaica Blue Mountain.
Right. And is there a specific type of coffee that always is Kona, or that you choose when you set up an orchard?
All right. Well, let me run this by you. Kona coffee is a federally protected trademark, and there are three components that must be fulfilled so that you can call a product Kona. First of all, you know, there are a number of different coffee species that do not cross-pollinate, including Robusta that everybody knows from West Africa. The most valuable one is Coffea Arabica from Ethiopia. And all Kona coffee must be 100% Coffea Arabica bean. That's the first one. Secondly, it must be grown only in the Kona districts. We have on this big island, is the size of Connecticut, yeah? We have a number of districts, and it has to be grown in the Kona district. That's the west side of the island.
Oh, so the whole island doesn't count.
Oh, no, 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 no. Whole France doesn't count, you know, Champagne only.
Right.
And so it's Kona, and Cognac only around the city of Cognac. And so the third component is that to export green coffee, it must be graded by the State Department of Agriculture as prime or better. So there is a grading process involved. So those are the three components. Now, furthermore, coffee, Coffea Arabica now, has thousands and thousands of varieties. And the variety that we have been growing here on this island for 130 years or so, is called Kona Tipica.
Now, of course, this is always going to be a matter of taste and perception. But the distinct flavor that people associate with, quote, Kona, how much of that do you think applies to the variety that you grow there, and how much of it is dependent on the soil and the climate, the terroir?
Right. Much of it depends on the soil. We have really, really unique soil. And I'll explain that because it's not an idle claim. Coffee needs well-drained soil, and our mineral-rich lava soil is absolutely ideal. Our lava soil is pretty much unique in the world because our volcanoes are unique in the world. And we are also the most northern coffee-growing region in the world. So our best coffee here in Kona grows between 1,700 and 2,500 feet, whereas if you were to go to other very, very famous and good coffee-growing regions in the world, you have really, really great coffee growing in 3,000, 4,000, 5,000 feet.
Right, but is it always a semi-mountainous crop?
You can grow coffee here in Kona in 500-foot elevation, you just must grow it in shade. And in the lower elevations, meaning under 1,700 feet, our coffee that is grown here grows faster, and the beans are smaller and less dense. And density and size is very important, so they don't win any prizes.
Oh, okay. So by being in this, at this very specific altitude,
right,
you get different levels of sunlight and a higher quality bean.
Correct.
Now, I'm looking at, you were kind enough to send me a couple packages,
sure,
of your delicious coffee, and I'm looking at the package now, and I see there are red cherries lining the side of the label, coffee,
correct,
cherries.
Right.
And down at the bottom are these interesting, like, white clover-like flowers. Are,
yes,
those the coffee flowers?
Yes, they are. Coffee belongs to the family of the gardenia and has beautifully fragrant white little blooms that come out after heavy rain.
Oh, you're killing me. You're killing me.
The bloom cycle is only 1 or 2 days, and then they go. But when they bloom, when I have a heavy bloom, we call it Kona snow, and the fragrance is just really, really wonderful.
And then the ground is covered with white petals.
Yeah, brown. They fall off quickly.
Oh, okay. At least there's something that's not.
Yes, and the bees go crazy. Now, coffee is self-pollinating, but bees help by 10%, and I'm surrounded by Ohia forest, so I love my bees.
So the coffee blooms, the blooms as in, you know, all tree fruits, regular,
yes,
fruits, the blooms,
correct,
are replaced by a fruit.
Yes, pinhead we call it.
And then this pinhead grows into the coffee cherry.
Correct.
And
but first into a full-size green cherry.
Right.
Full-size.
And is that what you pick?
No, no, no. Then I wait as long as I can, and I pay my pickers extra so that they pick only the red cherries that look like tomato you want to eat the same day.
Right.
And I pay them more than anybody else, so they make the same amount of money as if they pick faster, and I start out with a better product.
So you pick these red cherries.
Very red. I have a so-called wet mill, which I had custom built in Colombia, and I process my cherry the same night that we pick. Every night we pick, I process the very same night.
So there's so many corollaries here to fine red wine grapes.
That's right.
And when you process them, you are left with the bean, which is the seed from the center.
Correct.
And at this point, it's green?
No, not at all. The beans that come out are sort of slight whitish color.
Mm.
And then you may have to dry them for 2 to 3 weeks, depending on temperature. And you are going for a certain humidity in the bean. We have very accurate and good moisture meters. And the ideal moisture is, in my case, 10 to 11% humidity. And when they're that, then I store them in my, air-conditioned storage room. And that's not the end. They're still not green. They're called parchment coffee because they're covered with a tough parchment skin.
Oh, and so the, quote, green bean is underneath that parchment.
Correct. The next step is in a dry mill, you know, first of all, I let my coffee rest for a month. And in a dry mill, and it has to be organically certified. I should mention that out of the 750 farms, only 40 of us are certified organic. That is to say, no petrochemicals at all, and no pesticides, no herbicides.
And what is the biggest thing that you avoid that a regular conventional grower will be using?
Oh, Roundup.
Oh, so
tons and tons of Roundup. I don't use anything like that.
So that is the problem with growing coffee, is the weed control?
Of course.
Do you actually finish the process all in your little enclave there?
There is one exception. I have a very close connection to an organically certified dry mill where I take the coffee. They do exactly what I want them to do. I'm very happy with them. I've done it for years. And they husk the coffee from parchment coffee into green coffee. And the green coffee beans then get sized and put into different bins. And then the different sizes get mingled or not and go on a gravity table where they are sorted by weight. And so I sort things out. I usually lose about 16% or so, and the lightest grade gets thrown away. It stays there. The people there sell it to people who make soap and candles and so on. And the mid-range is, in my case, about 15% only. And I separate this out. I roast it separately. My farm interns drink it, and I donate it to Walter Reed Army Hospital in Washington, D.C. Roasted, yeah?
Oh, that's amazing. Yeah. Well, it is a complex process. It sounds like you're doing it in one of the most beautiful locations on the planet. I've enjoyed talking to you tremendously. I know more about where my morning cup of coffee comes from now. Dr. Hans Eckert, who is the owner of the Lyman Kona Coffee Farms. We'll put a link up to their website.
Oh, wonderful. Thank you very much.
At our website. Thank you for being with us today, sir.
Thank you. Thank you.
All right.
Bye-bye. Aloha. Huyo.
Take care. And now back to your fascinating phone calls at 1-888-346-9499. Carolyn, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Yes. Hi, Mike. How are you?
I am doing just fine. Thank you. And yourself?
Well, we're doing pretty well on a relatively cool day in Middle Tennessee.
Middle Tennessee. Okay, very good. What can we do for Carolyn in Tennessee?
Well, a couple of days ago, I went out to check on my tomato plants, and I found a giant, mutant-looking caterpillar.
And
it was green, very well camouflaged, and I made my husband come over to witness the size of this thing, and, you know, we found more since then, much smaller, thankfully.
Well,
what are they?
They're called tomato hornworms. They
okay.
are one of the largest caterpillars, and they are perfectly camouflaged. Despite their giant size, they blend in with the tomato foliage almost perfectly. Now,
and it's hard to see them.
Right, and you saw the little horn on their rear end.
Yes, it was. This thing, it gives me the willies now. I have nightmares about these giant things.
They are coming for you, Carolyn. they can chew their way through window screens and doorways. They will. They will come and pupate in your house. Now, the ones that you found, did he have any white spines up and down his back?
We did find one that had a bunch of, like, white kind of sacks on it.
Good. When you find a tomato hornworm that has those spines on its back, what you want to do is you want to carefully remove it, prune off that branch of the plant, and take it somewhere else in the garden where it can't get back on your tomatoes. Every one of those little white things is the egg case of a parasitic wasp that is one of the best ways of destroying caterpillars in the home landscape. Because every wasp that hatches out of those little cocoons will then attack another tomato hornworm or another pest caterpillar. It is very difficult to see these creatures well because they do blend in so well. Very often gardeners see their frass. Frass is a fancy word for bug poop. So that's why in a case like this, it's really good to go out and get some BT, which is an organic caterpillar killer. It's one of the oldest organic insecticides in use. It goes back like 50 years. The big brand names are Dipel, Thuricide. It's widely used even by conventional farmers because it's so effective. So it's in virtually every large independent garden center, and every gardening catalog carries a version of BT. And it's very safe to use. What you do is you mix it up as directed, you spray it on the plants that you're worried about caterpillars eating, and then only caterpillars that eat the sprayed part of the plants will die. It won't harm you, your pets, any beneficial insects. The pest has to chew the plant. It has to be a caterpillar, and the BT works very quickly to shut their stomach down, and they die. Any kind of caterpillar pest that you have show up in your garden, you spray the plant with BT, and everybody gets to go home real early, and you did no environmental damage. I will tell you, I had some tomato hornworms on my plants 2 or 3 years ago, and I knew that they turned into a night-flying moth that whose size is equal to the size of the caterpillar, and I wanted to see this. And so I actually left one of them pupate in a potted tomato. and left it out on my porch. And one night, my son came home, and this 12-inch wide sphinx moth flies into his face. They are remarkably large moths that come from these remarkably large caterpillars.
They're nightmares.
They are, but they're very easy to control. And because they are so close in color to the plant, and tomato plants can get so lush, this is a case where I really urge people to get the BT, spray the plant heavily, and then they don't have to worry about it anymore.
Well, I'm glad to hear that, because I've since then just been trying to find them and pick them off, and it's been driving me mad because they are so difficult to find on the plant.
And if you're seeing a lot of them, that means the BT will be a good investment, because you still got plenty of time to get lots of tomatoes. But they eat a lot. They can defoliate the plant, so I wouldn't sit around. I would get the BT, spray the plants right away, and end the problem.
All right. Well, thank you so much.
All right. Good luck.
Thank you.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Well, it's time for me to take a little break and remind everybody who's enjoying a healthy harvest of Love Apples to pick those fruits promptly. A fully ripe tomato that's left sitting out on the vine can lose a significant amount of flavor after being exposed to just one hot and sunny day. So bring those ripe treasures inside right away and let them sit out in a cool, dry, airy spot. Not in the refrigerator and not in direct sunlight. That's what you just saved them from. But don't go saving your stupis and Sheboygans from the sunny sill of your window just yet, because we'll be right back with more of your fabulous phone calls and the good mulches you can buy at a garden center. I'm your good mulch, Mike McGrath, and this is You Bet Your Garden.
This is WHYY. It's 11:38, 76 degrees in Center City.
Mike McGrath, right back at you with local events. The Trevose Horticultural Society cordially invites the public to attend their annual flower show this coming Friday, August 26th, and Saturday, August 27th, at the Wood River Village Auditorium in Bensalem, PA. Admission is free. I'll host a nifty fundraiser for the nice folks who care for the historic Fairhill Burial Ground on Sunday, September 18th from 5 to 8 p.m. at the University Barge Club headquarters on beautiful Boathouse Row. And Phil Abundance is accepting donations of fresh garden produce to help feed the area's hungry. You can drop your extras off Saturdays from 10 a.m. to noon at any of 11 different area locations. We'll post all the details at the events section of our website, YouBetYourGarden.org.
Later today on Fresh Air Weekend, biologist and author Marlene Zook says there's evidence that insects can display individual personalities and even learning behaviors, like ants guiding each other to a food source or bees collectively deciding on where to establish their next hive. Hear the latest at 1 today on Fresh Air Weekend here on WHYY. And this reminder, Labor Day weekend, why not join us for the WHYY Connections Festival at the Great Plaza at Penn's Landing. For more information, head to whyy.org/connectionsfestival.
Welcome back to You Bet Your Garden. I'm your host, Mike McGrath, and we're in the stretch now, cats and kittens. In just a little bit, we'll get to the question of the week. What mulches are good that I can buy at a garden center? I know I'm always yelling at people not to use this and not to use that, and that's the stuff that the garden center wants them to buy. Well, there are good mulches out there available. I've tracked them down, and I'll name names after a couple more of your fascinating phone calls at 1-888-346-9499. Mark, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Yeah, hi, Mike. How you doing?
I am doing just fine today, sir. How are you?
Very well, thank you.
And where is Mark doing very well?
I'm calling from Clifton Heights, Pennsylvania.
Okay, very good. What can we do for you, Mark?
Well, Mike, I'm considering planting some holly bushes outside a window I have. My friends think it's funny to walk up and yell inside it, and I figured they'd keep them away, but it's on a north by northwest wall, and I'm wondering if there's enough sunlight to keep those bushes thriving.
How long have you lived there?
I've lived here about 9 years.
Okay, so you know what the sun is like.
Yes.
How many hours of sun a day does this spot get?
In the summertime, it gets maybe about four, but in the winter, maybe half an hour.
So none of your shade is cast by deciduous trees?
That's correct.
Okay. And do you know what kind of hollies you're talking about?
Are
you
I'm looking into this, and I want to make sure everything works first.
Well, holly is a plant where there's imported species, and there's also the American holly. Now, the American holly often has more of a tree form, but it is native, and it's going to do, I would think, better than a Chinese or an English holly, which maybe are the kind of forms you like more because they're more dense and full. But you're not going to get a lot of fullness in that kind of shade. And you do realize that one of the corollaries with how much sun the plant gets is how many berries they're going to put on.
Okay.
The hollies and other berry-bearing bushes and trees that get the most sun have the most fruit. So with a limited amount of sun, the plant should stay alive. You'll get the nice leaf structure of the plant, but you won't have as many berries as you would in the winter if it got more sun. What you really need is soil that drains exceptionally well. There are very few plants that like wet feet, and holly is one especially that does very poorly in heavy clay soil that doesn't drain well. How many bushes are we putting in?
I'm thinking three.
And how teeny?
They were talking about 2 gallon. I don't even know what that means.
You know, when you buy a baby plant, you pay for the starting size. Maybe it's a year old and in a 1 gallon pot, maybe a 2 year old to be in a 2 gallon pot. That has nothing to do with the final spread of these plants. I mean, for instance, an American holly that has that tree form, that's going to have a spread of like 12 to 18 feet when it's full grown.
Oh, wow.
A Chinese holly with some productive pruning, you could probably keep at a width of 5 feet when it's mature, spread side to side. I'm thinking that you might have room for one plant there, because the other enemy of hollies is poor air circulation. So if you jam a bunch of them in together, they are going to make each other sick. So, you know, how wide is this area?
It's about 6 feet.
I think now we're looking at a Chinese holly simply because it has the least sideways spread of the plants. Tends to be very full, tends to be very well-rounded. It's not a native, but it's well-behaved. And the only thing that you also have to consider is which hollies need another tree around for pollination. Now, are there a lot of hollies in your neighborhood?
Not a one.
Yeah, see, so you might have to plant a pollinator to get berries. But do you care about berries?
No, I really don't, no.
If you care not about berries, you would excavate this soil, and this is not the standard guide. This is not the Spalding guide for tree planting.
Okay.
But you would really excavate this soil. Now, if you find it's fairly decent soil, I'd like you to plant the holly in that. But it sounds like I want you to buy a bag of Pro Mix or some other soil-free mix and mix it in with the soil you have out there if it's poorly draining to improve the drainage. And when you dig the hole, before you do any of this, take like a garden fork or a pitchfork and really bang the bottom of the hole to knock some drainage holes through it.
Okay.
And then plant it, amend the soil as you need to get good drainage. Any new plant should be kept well watered during its first year. But it sounds like you're planning to plant this in the fall?
Whatever's best for the plant.
Fall is the absolute best. You'll get the biggest plant for the lowest price. And the survival rate of fall-planted landscape plants, you know, trees and shrubs, is much better in the fall than it is in the spring because, you know, they're already dormant and they have a lot of time to get established before they have to go through summer. I mean, can you imagine a new plant having to go through the hellish summer that we just went through in the Pennsylvania-New Jersey region?
Right.
Whereby when you plant in the fall, it's kind of an insurance policy against that. So get a nice, compact Chinese holly. Really improve that soil well. Do water it after planting if we don't get reliable rain. but just one plant and try to keep the area open around it.
Excellent.
All right, man?
Well, thanks for your time, Mike. You've been very helpful.
All right. Good luck, Mark.
All right, thanks. Bye-bye.
1-888-346-9499. Judy, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hi.
Hello, Judy. How are you?
Okay.
And where is Judy okay?
Well, in the Roxborough section of Philadelphia.
Okay, very good. Judy in Roxborough, what can we do for you?
Well, you know, I called because last week I heard someone from Roxborough talking about composting, and I thought, I would love to have somebody that was interested in the waste, in my leaves, you know, in the food waste that I have. You know, I'd love to find out if he was interested in that. And the other thing is, I'd like to compost where I live. I even have a compost container, but I have so many problems with ants that I can't do it.
Okay, so you're talking indoors?
No, outside. I'm talking about outside.
What's the problem the problem with ants being outside?
Well, the problem is that anything I put outside, they just get into it. Like, I tried putting a piece of plastic down on my driveway to put my leaves there to compost them, and now this has just become this big breeding ground for ants.
Okay, well, that's also not how you compost.
Okay.
Go to our website. Go to You Bet Your Garden. Go to Garden Answers A to Z. You'll see listings under kitchen waste and fall leaves and basic composting. I will tell you, nobody else wants your garbage. That's not going to happen.
Okay.
Now, if you mostly want to make better use of your green kitchen waste, you should get a worm bin and keep that in your basement or under your sink. Those worms can actually take that kitchen waste and turn it into miraculous plant food.
Oh, okay.
Otherwise, you want to buy outside. If you're going to take your kitchen waste and compost any of it outside, you need one of these sealed black plastic units that will keep out vermin because you're in a very urban area.
Yes.
And you would fill your composter with mostly shredded fall leaves. They can't be whole.
Right.
And we're talking 80 to 90% of the composter would be filled with shredded leaves. And then into that, you could mix small amounts of your kitchen garbage, especially coffee grounds if you drink coffee. The idea in composting is to break everything down into the smallest possible size, which is why we shred the leaves, and then put it into a container that's either closed for urban areas or kind of wire or slatted bin for rural areas for airflow, but to contain it, to get that reaction going. You want to make a pile, not a long line.
Okay. Well, you know, I have one of those black plastic containers, but I was afraid to use it because of the ants, and I have problems with them coming into the house.
Again, if you go to the website, look under A for ants, you can see how you can use boric acid bait traps to keep ants out of your house, killing entire colonies at a time when they come inside. But outside, unless they're farming aphids on roses, ants are benign to beneficial. They're beneficial because they aerate the soil. They also keep termites away from homes. Ants and termites are natural enemies.
Oh, good, good. Okay.
This fall, I would urge you to take your black plastic composter, fill it up with shredded leaves, add as much coffee grounds in there as you can, a little bit of kitchen waste, keep it sealed, and be patient. By the time we get to the following spring, you know how they have an opening at the bottom so you can access the compost?
Right.
You should get some finished material from the bottom for your plants.
All right, well, that sounds great.
Okay, good luck.
Okay, thanks. Bye.
All right, as promised, it's time for the question of the week. The best garden and landscape mulches you can buy. We'll lead off with an email from Bob and Barbara in Chalfont, PA, who write, "We've tried root mulch, dyed black mulch, and other bagged mulches with nothing but problems. What do you recommend?" Maureen in Quakertown, PA writes, "I live in a 55-plus community. The association hires a landscaper to cut the grass and install new mulch in the flower beds every spring. Some of us have artillery fungus spore damage on our homes from this mulch. We tried everything to remove those spots with no success. We need your advice about what our community could use in place of this mulch. And finally, Terry in Doylestown hits the nail on the head. I feel that the answers at your website are not specific enough to enable weekend gardeners like myself to go to a store and buy the right mulch. Obviously, the wood mulch crisis is neither your fault nor responsibility, but it would be helpful if you could provide a clearer answer about what's okay to buy. Years ago, we were very happy with the cocoa shell mulch we used at our house in Santa Fe, but I haven't been able to find it since. We gardeners need something that'll stay down in the wind, not attract animals or rodents, protect against evaporation, and not encourage rot or mildew. But when you're facing multiple choices in a garden center, all recommended by the staff, it's hard to decide what, if anything, to buy. Well, Terry's right. A lot of our previous questions of the week on this topic were more geared towards warning people about the dangers of wood, bark, and root mulches than to holding their hands in a garden center. But that is where this battle is being fought. Now, as I've pointed out many times in the past, most garden centers are going to try and sell you some kind of wood mulch. Triple premium shredded bark, a root mulch, or those god-awful dyed mulches, which can contain chipped up pallets from China, old pressure-treated wood, construction debris, or other trash. A little paint can hide a lot. Now, they push this stuff because, one, they get it really, really cheap. And two, it's widely distributed and heavily marketed. The fact that it stains homes, kills plants, and attracts pests doesn't enter into their part of the equation. So to prepare for this answer, I visited garden centers at both of the two large nationwide big box home improvement stores. I found no mulch or compost product that I could recommend at either one. On the other hand, the majority of the large independent garden centers I visited did have at least one good mulch in stock, sometimes several. The good mulch I most often encountered was high-quality bulk compost for delivery and premium-branded bagged compost products for smaller jobs. Various Coast of Maine composts and Maryland's Leaf Grow product were the brands I most often encountered. But there were several others that looked equally reliable in the area I haunt between Philadelphia and Washington, D.C. Now, premium bag composts are going to be more expensive than the big white bags that just have something like compost, composted soil, or some other nonsense on them. But they are well worth the extra cost. The branded ones I sampled were fully composted and had a nice black color and very pleasant aroma. The generic ones were often wet, heavy, and stinky. Note, composted manure is not compost. It's a fertilizer, not a mulch. Now, to use real compost as a mulch, spread it 1 inch to 2 inches deep on top of your bare soil. University studies have shown that compost mulch will prevent weeds and retain moisture just as well as 2 inches of wood. If your compost mulch gets a little crusty in really dry weather, gently cultivate the very top with a garden hoe. Bonus, compost mulches will not breed artillery fungus or other nuisance mold spores, but they will provide all the food your landscape plants require. Next most available commercially are the seed, nut, and hull mulches. Terry mentions cocoa shell mulch, which many gardeners have used with great success. Now, like chocolate itself, the mulch does pose a danger to dogs that chew on everything they see, but otherwise it's close to perfect. Same goes for mulches made from pecan hulls, cotton seeds, and the like. Peanut shell mulch is great for gardeners in the north, but it's been linked to disease problems when used as a mulch in the south. And pine straw is a great and very attractive mulch. It's often available bagged and in bulk, especially down south. But for me, the best mulches are always going to be homegrown. If you live in an area with deciduous trees, you really must get a leaf blower vac and use it to suck up and shred many bags of leaves this fall. Shredded leaves make an excellent mulch. and the earthworms that colonize the soil underneath those leaves will feed your plants and aerate your compacted soil for free. Now, all of the disease-prone plants in my landscape, tomatoes, roses, fruit trees, lilacs, and the like, they get mulched with compost, but everything else gets shredded leaves. And finally, dried grass clippings from an herbicide-free lawn were found to be the best mulch in a study performed at the Rodale Institute. But those adjectives are important. The green clippings must be air-dried until they turn brown before you apply them as a mulch. And they must come from a lawn that has not been treated with chemical weed killers. Meet those requirements, and you've got the perfect landscape mulch. And it was judged the best-looking mulch as well. Well, that sure was some helpful information about picking the right mulch for your region now, wasn't it? Luckily for you, this and every question of the week appears in print at the Gardens Alive website. To read it in detail, with lots of links to more information about many of the mulches mentioned, just click the link at our website, youbetyourgarden.org. Yikes, my producer is threatening to mulch me with wet, stinky stuff from a bag if I don't get out of this studio. We must be out of time. But you can call us anytime at 1-888-346-9499 or send us your email, your tired, your poor, your wretched refuse teeming towards our garden shore at garden@whyy.org. Please tell us where you live in the email. Put the actual subject of the email in the subject line. And check first to see if the information you seek is already waiting for you at our website, youbetyourgarden.org, where you can click through to the question of the week. Find the solution to hundreds of garden problems, hint, hint, just like yours, hint, hint, in our Garden Answers A to Z section, and or listen to this show, listen to old shows, and or download this week's podcast. Elizabeth Perez Luna is executive producer of audio content for WHYY. Ken Queter plays our theme song. Our engineer this week has been Kevin, don't call me Merv Griffin. Our webmasters are Richard the Barbarian Banowitz and Sarah the She-Devil Kazar. Our shredded intern is Jessica Mandan. Completely composted Alexis Landis produces You Bet Your Garden for WHYY-FM in Philadelphia. The root of all mulch, Al Banks, is our editor. I'm covering the earthworms, Mike McGrath. And because it isn't the other way around, I'll see you next week. Sometimes your old plants are the best sources for new plants. I'm Mike McGrath, and on the next thrilling episode of You Bet Your Garden, we'll walk you through the basics of propagating new plants from cuttings, plus your fabulous phone calls.
Whether it's butter beans, basil, or a butterfly bush, Mike brings hard-to-beat advice to You Bet Your Garden every Saturday morning at 11 here on WHYY.